All right, thank you. The marshal can call court to order.
So the Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Connolly, and Judge Reyes. The Honorable James Flory presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals on September 23rd of 2021. We have four matters on our oral calendar this morning. The first matter is In Re, the matter of the welfare of the child of AJS and CL parents. That's court file 821-0515. Because we're appearing virtually via Zoom here today, that doesn't change our rules, meaning that both of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments and counsel for appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are recording the proceedings today and we'll post a recording of our proceedings during our normal course of business, and any other recording of these proceedings is prohibited by our rules. So with that, we'll begin. Counsel for appellant, or both counsel, if you would identify yourselves for the record as you begin your arguments. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
John Mack for mother. I'd like to begin my remarks to address the best interests of the child, because I think that's where the rubber meets the road in this case. In finding number 158, the district court said, Ms. S. has a strong interest in preserving the parent-child relationship. Sober, she's likely to be a good parent. However, she exposed the child to alcohol and controlled substances during her pregnancy, and after 8 months still refuses to obtain treatment to overcome her addiction. She fails to appreciate the harm she is exposed to. It seems to me that the best interest standard as put forth in the juvenile protection rules are rather vague. Obviously, the extensive rules of 518.171 are not directly applicable to the best interest standard in a juvenile protection case. However, I think they're a very good guideline because they indicate to a court what we really mean by best interest of the child and what we should be looking to.
So Mr. Mack, Mr. Mack?
Yes.
Good morning, sir. But the Minnesota statute 518.17 is a different statute, and that's not the standard that we apply in this case.
Of course not. But what I'm saying is it's a good guideline for the court. The court isn't bound by it by any means, but it sets forth some things that the court should be looking at when it's taking up the juvenile standards, particularly since the standard is pretty vague. It says, look to the mother's interest, look to the child's interest, and look to what other interests may be involved in it.
Right, but case law says that.
Let me ask you this. Can you point us to any case where our court or any court in Minnesota has applied the standards under or has considered the standards under 518.171 in analyzing a best interest issue in a TPR case?
I haven't seen one. Obviously, there hasn't been one where it's used one because it would be inapplicable to use it. What I haven't found is where they've at least commented on it, and I think perhaps they should have. But take a look at things that we have here. Reasonable preference from the child obviously is irrelevant, but there's no evidence of domestic abuse. There's very little testimony addressed to the issue of the willingness of the parent to provide ongoing care, although obviously she has on various occasions visited the child and indicated a strong interest in the child. The benefit to the child in maximizing parenting time and the benefit to the child of, for example, living with or seeing her siblings. Remember, she has two older brothers, half brothers, by another man, which my client still has parental rights in, and families should not be broken up without strong indications. Now, one of the problems I see with the analysis of best interests by the judge in this case is I think it merely restates the grounds for termination in this case, that the mother is addicted to drugs, that she continues to use drugs, and that her efforts at treatment have been minimal. it seems to me that these are the grounds for the saying that the reasonable efforts by the county to reunite have been failures. It seems to me one of the important things that was found in this case is that there was testimony by the psychologist in this case that she may have severe mental health problems. And at one point she said, these are probably real and need to be addressed, but they can't be addressed until her addiction problem is addressed. That seems to me to be circular. You're saying that she can't get mental health treatment until she gets her addiction under control, and she can't get her addiction under control as long as she has underlying mental health problems. This court has said regularly that mental health problems in and of themselves are insufficient to ground termination. The other thing that I noticed going through the record here is that my client hasn't refused treatment either for mental health or for addiction. She has signed up several times for it. She took outpatient treatment. She indicated that she would want to go to, at one point, Project Turnabout, and at another point, another treatment facility. This was never actually followed through except for the outpatient treatment. The problem that we have here is that the child was taken from the hospital immediately, and the statute has a 6-month period of time pointing toward permanency, except that this can be extended. I think this would have been a very good case for extending for another 6 months, because you have a mother who visits the child, successfully visits the child, has a good relationship with the child, and has a child with other siblings. We all know that addiction is tough. You can't get rid of it in a day. You have to try to have some treatment, and without treatment, let's face it, she probably can't overcome her addiction. But I think that trying to get her in treatment in such a short period of time, in this case, was unfair to her and therefore unfair to the child. Now, one of
Mr.
the
Mack,
things- Yes.
Mr. Mack, I have a couple of questions. One, you referenced the findings supporting the best interest and that they seem similar to the reasonable efforts by the counties, the findings are related to that factor. And you state in your brief that case law requires that the best interest be made independent from the grounds from termination. Can you point to any case law that supports that statement?
I think I had it in my brief, and it would be I can't at the time, so I'll rely on my brief, but I think that the matter of SZ, which 547 Northwest 2nd, 886, indicates that it has to be determined in addition to the findings of grounds for termination. And it seems to me that that means that there has to be an independent evaluation of the best interests of the child. Now, nobody's going to say that you can't use some of the things for grounds for termination as a determination of best interests. Of course you can. If the mother is beating the child, that might be a reason why it isn't the best interest of the child to be with the mother. But you also have to look at the other reasons why best interests are relevant here, in addition to the reasons stated for the grounds for termination.
Well, I would just note that you make that statement on page 3 in your opening brief, but SZ, I should say, that's a palpable unfitness case, so that's not the situation here. I do note that in your reply brief, you refer to the In Re Tangi case on page 5 of your reply brief, that for the proposition that the best interest must be determined independent from the TPR. But there we concluded that the district court made no findings or determination whatsoever on the best interest. And that's not the case here. The district court here made extensive findings and determinations with respect to the best interest.
I would disagree with you slightly, Judge, that I don't think that the findings were extensive. It was the last part of the district court's analysis, and much of that analysis repeated the analysis that had been made for the vulnerability to a TPR. Of course, that's subjective, whether one thinks something is extensive or not, but I would not call it extensive. One of the things that strikes me in this case, I do an awful lot of these cases for the 8th District, is how articulate the mother is compared to most of the cases where we're dealing with TPRs. She took the stand, she was reasonable, she was intelligent, she was to the point. And it seems to me that this is a mother whose relationship to her children is worth saving. It was determined that her relationship with her two sons was worth saving. Even though there was a CHIPS case, she retains the right to her children, and she retains contact constantly with her sons. The same should be said of her daughters. What I think should have been done by the court in this case is extended another 6 months to see if we can really get her some treatment and to see if the mental health issues can be addressed. Because if we could somehow get her sober, there's no doubt that this is an intelligent, loving mother who has good relationships with her children, would have a good relationship to her mother. I think both the court and the county in this case, frankly, jumped the gun. Now,
Matt, when you say jump the gun here, and first of all, just in terms of the district court's order, it wasn't a 5 or 10 page order. It was a 33 page order containing many findings of fact and conclusions of law. So I don't think we can consider it to be on the light side there. But in terms of the jumping the gun, I mean, didn't this case start because a child was born with signs of alcohol and drugs in the child's system, meaning that mother had been taking drugs while pregnant with child. How is that jumping the gun in terms of the county's actions?
Because this is a reasonable efforts case. If this had been a palpable case, you could make an argument that the parent was palpably unfit for the reasons that you said. The problem is, however, that the county didn't allege palpable unfitness. They alleged reasonable efforts, so that we have to look at what reasonable efforts were made. And in this case, they made a few efforts to line her up for treatment. She accepted some of them. They had difficulty arriving at a case plan that both of them could live with. And that's it. So the reason why I think that they jumped the gun on the case here has nothing to do with the reason that the child was removed from the home. Obviously, you want to correct that condition, and that's the condition that you want to spend your time dealing with. But I think that my client was making progress toward it, and I don't think that the efforts of the county in this case would have been unavailing. I didn't see in the record, it might be somewhere, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see at any time where the judge relieved the county of its duty to provide reasonable efforts, which usually happens in a failed reasonable efforts case. As I say,
Ms. Mack?
Yes.
I just have one last question. Did mother obtain sobriety at any stage here?
It's hard to say. She failed most of her drug tests, but of course, drug tests aren't made every week. It seems to me, for example, that when she was on the stand, you've seen her testimony. It didn't look like this was a person who was under the influence of either alcohol or drugs. So at some point, she either achieve sobriety, or the argument that I really don't want to make, but I really have to bring up, perhaps whatever she was using wasn't affecting her. Certainly alcohol would, but she certainly was sober by the time she got on the stand. It seems to me that she has attempted to comply with the case plan. She was being balky, but being balky is the kind of thing that you have an opportunity, in this case, 12 months rather than 6 months, to overcome. I think that this is a mother worth salvaging, and I think we should have tried. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Glassroot. I am the Big Stone County attorney, and I represent a respondent, which is Big Stone County Family Services in this case. This is a case where there were really numerous ongoing attempts to, in counsel's words, salvage the parent-child relationship and work towards
Mr. Glassroot, unification. I'm sorry to interrupt. I had one question. Mr. Mack, in his argument, said that, if mother had more time, maybe things would have been turned around. Did trial counsel below at any point ask the court to extend the period for good cause for, the timelines?
Your Honor, I do not recall that request coming up. And I can understand why it wouldn't have come up. Basically, because there were no signs that anything was going to change based on everything in the record. This is a case where it appears, with all due respect to the mother, that there was some sort of rope-a-dope strategy, if there was a strategy, to not really follow through on anything. If it at all seemed possible, without extreme pressure, mother refused even to agree to the case plan at first. So that was delayed. There are delayed tests. There's the delayed parenting assessment, which, by the way, is exactly where all of the mental health recommendations could have sprung from. She never even reported for psychometric testing. So 6 months would not have made a difference, and they were not, to my recollection, requested, unless there's something in my memory or the transcript that I missed. We'll go in the order that they're raised. First, as to the best interests of the child, the county disagrees with the notion that this is somehow a vague term. It's really a very self-explanatory term as to whether something is better for the young child in this case or worse. County certainly would say that Chapter 518 definitions are unavailing, both by definition and because that simply would apply to a very different type of case in which typically there are two parents in a custody fight, and the court needs to weigh between these two parents and their involvement with the child and everything that's going on. In those cases, the court is simply weighing some different factors. But the best interests in this case are supported by ample findings and conclusions of the trial court. It's not accurate to say that because the analysis comes at the end after court has set forth the voluminous facts, that the court didn't analyze the best interest at play. And as noted, the court was looking prospectively at what it appeared could happen. And the court concluded that essentially mother was not following through, was not giving any signs that she was going to follow through after many warnings, as is the case in Minnesota, it's made very clear to parents when an infant is placed out of home that there is a tight timeline for reunification. It's 6 months. That's what's provided by statute, and it's provided exactly because of the tender age of the child, the need of children for permanency. That is why best interests have do favor the termination in this case. Now, as to reasonable efforts, that's a separate prong that the court needs to analyze. It's different from best interests, but obviously there's a common set of facts that the court needs to look at, and that's exactly what the court in this case did. These efforts included many attempts to get mother help, many attempts at treatment, continued chemical testing to try to improve accountability, and that's something that's really needed to press a party toward treatment. And they included the requirement that she complete the parenting assessment, which is another thing that the mother delayed in this case, eventually showed up for and participated in, but again, did not complete all of the psychometric testing. So even then, the doorway to mental health services was essentially obstructed by the mother's own actions. So it's no surprise that because of her actions and her obstinance, treatment, counseling services were recommended and eventually started, but only after apparently every other delaying tactic had been exhausted. That's unfortunate for the mother and also for the child, but at the end of the day, it is the child's needs that need to be met here. I would note that Ms. Flagel, the counselor who testified, also specifically noted that sobriety was not optional in pursuing mental health services. That's her assessment as the counselor, and there's nothing in the record to contradict that testimony. It's very speculative what the petitioner is putting forth here. It's essentially, as counsel said, perhaps in 6 months, somehow she could be restored to sobriety. But we're not dealing in somehows in this case. We're dealing in what are reasonable efforts. It's not extraordinary efforts. It's not anything of the sort. It's under these circumstances, were the efforts that were provided reasonable? And under the totality of the circumstances, it's clear that family services really made reasonable attempts and went the extra mile to get this parent help. It's unfortunate that she did not wish to cooperate due to lack of insight or simple unwillingness. Her articulate presentation during trial itself, during her testimony, that doesn't change any of the analysis. If anything, the county would point to that as signs that she knew what she had to do. She understood the process. She was capable of comprehending what needed to happen, and she just, for whatever reason, didn't do it, and thus the reasonable efforts that were undertaken failed.
Mr. Glassford, you were talking about the reasonable efforts, and in particular, the county's position that with respect to her addiction. You also argue in the brief that addiction needs to be addressed before mental health. And appellant argues that that's kind of a circular argument there. My question to you is, why is it that addiction needs to be addressed before mental health? Isn't it more often than not the case that the two go hand in hand, that you need to address the mental health issues in conjunction with addiction?
Well, Your Honor, I think that argument is reliant on Ms. Flagel's testimony, which, as she points out, I think it's page 89 of the transcript. If she does not address her mental health diagnosis, she is at a higher risk to return to substances in order to cope. But that's very prospective. That's in the future, because Ms. Flagel goes on to say.
I'm not talking about whether it's speculative or not. My question is, it seems like the county's position is you need to address your addiction first. Once you do that, then we can address your mental health issues. But if she knows she already has mental health issues and the county knows she has mental health issues, why can't those be addressed at the same time? Why is it sequential? Why can't they be addressed parallel? Because as we've seen more often than not, the chemical addiction issues are related to the mental health issues, and dare I say, sometimes a result of the mental health issues. So why can't those be addressed at the same time or in conjunction with the addiction issues?
Well, Your Honor, there's not a whole lot in the record about that other than but Ms. Flagel's testimony does note specifically that individual counseling should be done when sober. And there's just no period of sobriety in this case. But in any event, leaving that aside, what in fact happened in this case is that the parenting time the parenting assessment was done. Following that, Woodland Center's treatment was arranged, and that that process was ongoing. But through the mother's own actions, she really delayed that process quite a bit. And the reasonable efforts here were to recommend sobriety, which is needed to successfully address mental health as best as possible. Recommend parenting assessment, which the petitioner delayed, and then arrange for counseling pursuant to that parenting assessment. So it's not the case in this record that mental health went unaddressed. It was contemplated in the case plan. It was provided for in the case plan. It's just the case that those efforts were reasonable and they failed because of this petitioner's own actions. So in conclusion, the county's position is that as to these ultimate issues of reasonable efforts and of best interests, there hasn't been an abuse of discretion here by the district court. Its court made detailed and specific findings, looked at a long record of failure to follow through by the petitioner, and reached the correct conclusion, which this court should uphold. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glasser. Mr. Mack, you do have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you wish.
May it please the court, I'd like to address one issue that Judge Reyes brought up earlier when he stated that the judge made careful findings and had 159 of these. Indeed, he had 159 separate findings, but he had only 10 on the issue of best interests. If we turn to ADD 33 in my memorandum, which is the only place where it directly addresses the best interests of the child, we find that until finding 155, the best interest of the child simply restates the law. So if we look at 155 through 159, 155 says, Mr. Lyons voluntarily terminated his rights to the child and agreed that termination was in the child's best interest. I suggest that that one is irrelevant. 156, all children are entitled to a safe, stable home where the cares are met. Nobody disagrees with that. 157, Soren is nearing his first birthday and has never lived with either parent. He has lived in the same foster home and has weekly visits with Miss Chablin for most of the last 9 months, though no in-person visits occurred in February due to Ms. Chablin's multiple missed visits. So that really indicates that the mother is trying to have, for the most part, a close relationship with the child. 158 indicates that Ms. Chablin has a strong interest in the parent-child relationship. So the place where it meets the road, where the rubber meets the road, is finding number 159. Termination of parental rights will allow the child to be placed in a home.
Mr. Mack, I disagree. I mean, what about the last three sentences? However, she's exposed the child to alcohol and controlled substances during pregnancy and after 8 months still refuses to obtain treatment. She fails to appreciate the harm she exposed and fails to appreciate the harm her continued use possesses to him. I mean, that sounds like best interest to me.
It sounds to me like a ground for termination. Now, it also, of course, relates to best interest, but the judge's findings on best interest don't go beyond that to say, in spite of this or because of this, the best interest of the child lie in terminating her parental rights. I think that the judge is very thin on the grounds on best interests. And insofar as you point out what you just did, Judge Connolly, that goes to the reason for termination, and it doesn't go beyond the reason for termination. And I think it's very clear that the cases have said that the determination of best interests is not the same as the determination of grounds for termination. And I suggest that that means that they can't be the same. Now, it does seem to me that in the argument here, where we're talking about mental health, there undoubtedly are programs which address both mental health and addiction. In fact, it seems to me a sophisticated addiction program is probably going to have a mental health component. I don't know that, but it sounds eminently reasonable. The problem is I don't see anywhere in the efforts that were made by the county that any program was suggested to her or proposed to her which would have this dual track and which would be needed to address the problems that she has.
But what's in the record, Mr. Mack, that even if they had recommended a dual diagnosis type program, that she would have showed up for it? I mean, the record is replete with her not showing up for various treatment programs. So I don't know how that advances the ball for her here.
Well, I think how it does is if they don't tell her that it's dual track and she needs dual track, she probably is going to be resistant to the program in a way she wouldn't be if she knew that she was getting a program that could really help her. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, counsel, thank you for your briefing and arguments in the matter. We will take the matter under advisement at this time and we'll issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. We stand adjourned on this matter.
Thank you.